Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy. I'm here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. I am a 25-year health and green journalist, recently blogging on the Huffington Post, as well as working on a book all about all of the things that affect our health and our total health environment. I've been with you on Progressive Radio now for over a year and a half, and every week we bring in different thought leaders, experts, mavericks, vanguards, activists, advocates, who really speak to us about all that's going on in our total health environment that affects our health, the health of our children, the health of our communities, the health of our society, and the health of planet Earth. So each week on Connect the Dots, we cover a different facet of all that's interconnected that supports our health, our life, and our well-being. Today's show, I have a really terrific guest for you, but one of the things that we do every week on Connect the Dots, as you know, is begin, if you are a regular listener, which I hope you will become, we begin with action, because in the many years that I covered the integrative health movement, we always encouraged healthy nutrition, healthy lifestyle choices, stress management, yoga, and there's great science and clinical results from doing all of those individual interventions that we can do. But over the time, more and more people are waking up to the reality that unless we also become proactive, not just about personal health, but about the health of our communities and society, we can't be healthy in a vacuum. We can't protect our health from the choices we make as a society that run counter to health. And that's the theme of this show and my blogging and books and all the rest of it. So this week, we have a really terrific action that people can participate in. I've covered fracking a great deal on this program. For those of you who don't know what that is, you can go on the PNRN Connect the Dots archives, and there are many terrific programs with both leaders of the anti-fracking movement as well as individuals who've been affected. We've had programs about the health impacts, the economic impacts, whole host of different things, so please do go on our archives and check that out. But, you know, let me just briefly say that it's a form of extraction of gas currently being used and proposed all around the country and the world that has very serious downstream toxic impacts, both on the immediate communities where it's done and on all the communities downstream, which is coming more and more to mean major urban populations. Nevertheless, because the gas and oil industry is one of the most powerful in the world right now, they are having their way in pursuing this late-stage extraction game, where better options might be to develop renewable energy and put our billions of tax monies and our infrastructures pointed in that direction. So to get the federal government to shift its position and to understand the incredible groundswell of citizen support for safe energy as opposed to late-game fossil fuel extraction, there is a March on Washington this very week, 3 days from now. It's on July 28th, and people are busing in from all across the country and flying in to speak, in fact, from all over the world, which is pretty incredible. So it's this July 28th. You can go to stopthefrackattack.org and learn all about this very exciting rally that's occurring in Washington, D.C. Some of the speakers are Bill McKibben of 350.org, Allison Chin of the Sierra Club, Josh Fox, the director of the Academy Award-nominated film Gasland, Calvin Tillman, the former mayor of Dish, Texas, which was ground zero for a lot of fracking problems. Also on the list is Dr. Catherine Thomason of Physicians for Social Responsibility, because there are severe health impacts that arise when this is done. And another speaker is Doug Shields, who's been a guest in our program. He's a former member of the Pittsburgh City Council who passed one of the United States' first urban anti-fracking bans. Or rather, I should say fracking ban. They want to ban fracking, not ban the opposition to it. So please do go to stopthefrackattack.org, and you can support them, you can volunteer, and you can go there. They have buses, housing, will answer all your questions, let you know about the schedule. Very important. And thank all of you who feel you can participate. Thank you so much for your activism. On today's show, we're going to be talking about a different topic in a different arena of public policy and personal health, and that is our food, the safety of our food, the health of our food. You know, we're exhorted to eat a healthy food, but we kind of, to do that, have to really avoid the main food system. We have to kind of creep around and find, you know, things at the edges of the supermarket, or we go to farmers markets, health food stores, grow our own, all the rest of it, because the main food supply and the main food investment in this country is into foods that unfortunately make people sick. So on today's show, we have someone who is not only an expert on this topic, but he's been a pioneer, a thought leader, an advocate on these questions for decades upon decades. I am so thrilled to have him on today's show. I'm going to welcome him now. It's James S. Turner, Jim Turner. He is a lawyer, an attorney in Washington, D.C., who represents many terrific outfits that are preserving our rights and fighting the good battle in terms of getting public policy that supports our food and health. He's also the chairman and founder of Citizens for Health, a national organization that helped get us our rights to supplements and has been fighting many campaigns successfully in the intricacies of government in Washington, D.C. So welcome, Jim, to Connect the Dots.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. I very much enjoyed listening to your conversation about fracking, which is definitely an important issue that should be focused on. I do want to say that I am not actually a founder of Citizens for Health nationally. I was a founder of a local chapter here in D.C. Mm-hmm. and then went on the board and became chairman of the board about 3 years after it was founded.
I see. And you've been, how long ago was that? How long have you been chairman?
It was founded in 1993, and I've been on the board since 95 and chair since about 96.
Okay. Well, those are terrific bona fides. You know, the range of what you cover is really quite broad. You cover product safety, food, drugs, health, environmental concerns. People may not be aware of it, but those of us who use healthy nutraceutical supplements to supplement get more nutrition and minerals than can readily be gotten from a food supply that's really been undermined over many decades and therefore has lower nutritional value, those of us who use such supplements can really thank you and Citizens for Health, because it was Citizens who, way back in the day, around the time you're talking about, 95 or so, organized the public outcry to press Congress to pass the laws that allow us to make those consumer purchases and choices without a lot of undue regulation and intervention. And over that time, over the, 17 years or so, you know, we really have had an excellent safety record. So, you know, everyone listening to this show, you know, we have you, Jim, and Citizens to thank.
And it's actually there are about 150,000 unique emails on our list. There's probably some duplication there, but we've got well over 120,000 people who are hooked up to our system and are very, very strong activists. And that's been the backbone of Citizens. Let me talk a minute. I want to talk about that point about Citizens in a moment. But I do want to say that while it looks like my activities range over a broad set of issues, the core point is that the corporations that manage every one of our marketplaces are supposed to be governed by regulations that are established first by legislation in Congress and then by regulatory agencies. And the issue that we really focus on very strongly in each one of the areas you talked about is the manner in which the regulations are consistently twisted against the public and against consumers and on behalf of corporations. And that's where we've been focusing our attention. Now, Citizens for Health came into existence in 1993 to fight an effort of the FDA to roll back certain benefits that had been achieved for dietary supplements starting back in 1976 with the passage of something called the Proxmire Act, which was the first time that FDA's authority to treat dietary supplements as if they were drugs, which is what they were trying to do, was actually crimped. And the FDA in 1993 tried to regain the idea that dietary supplements were the same as drugs. And at that point, a huge outpouring of the public led to the passage of the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act, mm-hmm. which is sort of the Bill of Rights for dietary supplement use in the country. And Citizens was the consumer part of that coalition, and generated there were generated about almost 2 million letters to Congress, largest number of letters that had ever been generated to Congress on an issue. The previous high amount was actually in 1976 on that thing I called the Proxmire Act, where 1 million letters, those are letters, those are handwritten letters, that went to the Congress. This is a very, very powerful issue because it combines personal rights, consumer information and choice, and health all together in one package. And the activists that are a part of Citizens for Health actually do raise up their heads and write their notes and make trouble whenever the FDA or the FTC goes off the reservation. As a matter of fact, just last month, Citizens for Health in October was the first group in the country to really attack the FDA for some dietary supplement guidance that they were putting out, which was very pernicious and undercutting of both the regulatory process and consumer access to supplements. And we called for the FDA to withdraw those. It took us a little time to get the rest of the dietary supplement community to come around to that request. But last month, the FDA did withdraw that guidance, and we now are beginning a phase in which they're talking about putting the guidance out again in some other form, and we want to take charge of that debate and move it forward. So keep tuned to Citizens for Health as we unfold that particular battle.
So you're really functioning. You know, I think if we had maybe done this show 8 or 10 years ago, we're talking about this 8 or 10 years ago, and you know, we've known each other. I don't even remember, but I think it's probably around 8 years ago.
At least, yeah.
But if we were having this conversation, back then, I think a lot of people, you know, the general public was a lot less savvy about the fact that things that go on in little regulatory bureaucratic corners of regulatory agencies like the FDA and the USDA, you know, that's not something that most people wanted to pay attention to. Now, more and more, as more and more bad things in all sectors have kind of come raining down the pipe from those quarters, people today, I think, are a lot more aware that we, you know, we ignore what goes on there at our peril. And, you know, one of the things that you do and that Citizens does is you serve as a watchdog and an advocate, both within those agencies, and also you're a bridge so that concerned citizens, activists, people who care about these very important issues, because we're not going to have good health without them, let's face it, can actually tune in. They can sign up on citizens.org, and so then when you flag an issue, when you know what your position to do down there in D.C. is a watchdog and an advocate, then that's when they can get into gear and get involved, and it's a very, very easy way to do it, and a very important service, actually, that you're performing that is very necessary. And let me say to my listeners that if you think it isn't, you're misguided, because, you know, more and more things are going off the rails. So this Citizens for Health at citizens.org, this is a place to sign up.
Yeah,
if you want healthy food, if you want to have the rights to supplements, if you care about what's in the food supply, and a range of other issues, or, you know, or even the water supply and a range of other issues. So I just want to give that, you know, kind of plug there.
Yeah, and the we worked very, very hard to not overburden our group with a lot of stuff that takes time from them. We try to do alerts that actually, if they engage, will make an impact. We do have some very strong supporters in Congress. Senators Harkin and Hatch have been a real mainstays of this community for years. Citizens for Health is, we call ourselves Consumer Voice of the Natural Health Community. And we focus on dietary supplements and food and water safety and complementary, alternative, and integrative medicine. And we watch for things to happen that we think the public can influence. We have some enemies as well. Senator Durbin in Washington from Illinois is, for some reason, very misguided on dietary supplements and what they mean. He seems to have got it in his mind that they're the same as drugs, and he's trying very hard to force the dietary supplement world into the drug mold. We mounted a campaign against a bill he proposed, and were able to get basically an 80-20 win in the Senate on a bill that he proposed just this last about a month ago. Just to give you an example of the way Citizens works, he proposed a bill a few years ago that was going to be added to the defense appropriation bill that would severely restrict the sale of dietary supplements on military bases. And our lobbyists noticed that he was going to do this. It was slipped into a debate on the floor of the Senate. And the notification went out. We saw it, our lobbyists saw it, we sent out an alert to our members, and we got 25,000 communications to Senator Durbin within 48 hours. The result of that was that with the pressure from Senator Harkin and Hatch, he withdrew his bill on the floor, and in fact they shook hands and said they would come up with something else to satisfy his interests. And we were asked if we would support a bill that was being pushed forward by the American Herbal Products Association to create a adverse action reporting, adverse events reporting system for dietary supplements. Mm-hmm. And we said we would support such a bill if it also included over-the-counter drugs. And so about 18 months later, Senator Durbin and Harkin and Hatch introduced a bill called the Over-the-Counter Drug and Dietary Supplement Adverse Reaction Reporting System. Mm-hmm. And it passed, and we were one of about five consumer groups, one from the dietary supplement world, and then the four other main consumer groups, plus all the industry groups from the dietary supplement world supported that bill. Now, one of the reasons we wanted to support it and felt it was really important, and we worked closely with the Herb Trade Association, with the American Herbal Products Association, was because the safety record of dietary supplements is so powerful that to have it actually verified would be a powerful argument for moving forward. And that's been the case in the 5 years or so that it's been out. There's been a handful of suggested possible relationships between a dietary supplement and an adverse reaction. And that's an argument that we are now able to make in our debates in Congress about why there does not need to be further restrictions of dietary supplements.
And it also goes against the double standard where there's this kind of cloud of suspicion pointing at supplements as not being as rigorously studied. And, of course, there have been many, many studies. But because there's not drug companies trying to study them and they're not studied, all of them are not studied, or then there's this kind of cloud of uncertainty around them. And now that can be dispelled by
That cloud of uncertainty is purposely created by PR from certainly one area that comes from is the drug industry. Mm-hmm. What we actually have is that dietary supplements are the most heavily regulated food that there is. Mm-hmm. I mean, dietary supplements are food. They're part of the food regulation section of the FDA. There's a section called, originally in the Act, was called special dietary foods, and that's where dietary supplements fit, and that's the section that has been amended and created, and more regulated regulations have been put on dietary supplements. But the underlying issue is that drugs are very, very dangerous chemicals, which are known to cause serious problems, and the regulatory regime that has been established is that they have to show that there are benefits from these dangerous chemicals that outweigh the dangers. That's the regulation that's set up. And it's set up the way it is with the rigor and the double-blind testing and the animal testing and all of that, because we are dealing with very seriously dangerous chemicals, intrinsically dangerous chemicals. And so the only way that you could rationally allow them to be used by people is to be sure that you have solid evidence that whatever benefits they have outweigh the risks, and then to make sure that everybody's informed about the risks so that they can be alert for side effects and so forth. That's a very powerful regulatory regimen for substances that are inherently dangerous. It's not at all appropriate for substances that are not that are inherently safe, which is what is true of dietary supplements. And that distinction needs to be at the heart of all of our battles as we go forward.
It's an interesting thing because I, in the community that's concerned about fracking and concerned about GMOs, I've been part of, I had some presentations and panels that I hosted at the Green Festival, the Brooklyn Food Conference, and some other places. And one of the things that comes up a lot is people saying, look, we'd like to see fracking chemicals looked at, studied, regulated. This is hazardous waste, you know, that's going in to the water, food supply, and air, et cetera, and it hasn't really been studied. And people in that realm, Jibba, I could tell you, are looking, you know, kind of wistfully at the degree of study and regulation around prescription drugs and wishing that something comparable could be put into place for these other toxic and hazardous chemicals that just have a kind of free bill. They have a free dance card to play without that kind of study. And so people are actually regarding, in that realm, the prescriptive drug studies and regulatory policy as a model that should be applied.
Well, the model of what is supposed to be being done in the regulation of drugs, and let's be sure that we're clear that drugs as inherently dangerous chemicals is a good theoretical system. Its biggest problems are that it's not actually enforced nearly as well as it should be. The interesting thing about dietary supplements in relation to pharmaceutical drugs is that dietary supplements are said to be drugs if they make a claim that that the substance itself will help to affect the disease, and the FDA hasn't approved that claim. Now, that, then they say, makes it a drug. And once they say that, it's like a sleight of hand. People lose the fact that a pharmaceutical drug is an inherently dangerous chemical which needs to be heavily regulated. And then somebody puts a dietary supplement out that the FDA says, we've not approved your health claim, therefore you're a drug. And then they start to try to regulate it, and they're saying that we had a case in which the FDA's, it was actually the FTC's expert, said that it would take about $100 million to check each ingredient in an herb that was being said to have been used for treating cancer for years. And the idea, just forget everything else, the idea that an herb that has a number of ingredients would have to have $100 million spent to test each one of the ingredients is foolishness. The reason for that kind of testing is because when it's put into place and was in the law, it was designed to test unsafe, inherently unsafe chemicals. And now you've got something which is inherently safe. It's been used for hundreds of years. It's people eat it, people put it in their food and so forth. But if you happen to say it might affect cancer, now you've got to do a $100 million test on each of its maybe 50, maybe 500 ingredients. before you can do that.
Of course, there's nobody there to pay for that because the herbal, the people growing it in the garden where it's been grown for hundreds of years and eaten by hundreds and thousands of people, they don't have the money. They're not a big industry developing novel synthetic chemicals that has the resources to
well,
do that.
Well, and they also, you can't, even if they were, even if you had a billion-dollar industry, they can't patent it. So there's no post-approval cash flow that justifies putting that kind of money into it. And so what happens is the entire system is skewed against anything that is, quote, natural. If it's natural, you are precluded by law and by economics from saying anything about its ability to cure, treat, mitigate, diagnose, or prevent a disease. You just can't say that, either by law or by economics. And what that does is it just skews the entire system away from a choice that many, many people want to make for advancing their own health. And then we, in my view, we actually start with that particular reality to lay out why we have the most expensive healthcare system in the world, and it's one of the least effective healthcare systems. We rank 35th in the world by a quality of healthcare system, and we pay twice as much per patient as the next system in the world. So we have the highest cost by 100%, and we have 34 major countries, 34 countries, some not even major, doing better in health outcomes than we are. And I think that a big part of that starts where we systematically skew the system economically and legally against anything, any natural choice that an individual might want to make to advance their own health.
So it actually functions almost as a pharmaceutical industry protection racket, where some people would misguidedly think, oh, it's the government and they're protecting us, the people. But in fact, it's actually, it's a form of protectionism. The other piece of this that I always think about is, you know, when you say thousands of years, there's a lack of respect for history of the planet Earth, the long evolution of nature on our planet, and the lives of people who came before us, our own ancestors, and all the rest of it. There's a lack of respect in a sense that now today, with all of these industrial and scientific developments, technological developments, you know, we're standing here in the pinnacle, supposedly, and everything that came before is just willy-nilly. It's nothing. It doesn't count. There's no wisdom there. There's nothing to be gotten from that. And so, you know, if you say thousands of years, people just kind of yawn. That's history today, now. The tweet that I saw 2 seconds ago, this is really what matters. And there's no gift or knowledge coming to us from the past or the uses of the past. But in fact, from a scientific perspective, thousands of years of use constitutes a long-term and successful scientific experiment, if we must put it, you know, within the current context for people to be able to find value and get an idea. And we've been kind of brainwashed into thinking, you know, these recently developed forms of studies to, you know, excrete value from, you know, these novel synthetic chemicals and the science and industrialized science and the millions of dollars that invest in and back that's the only kind of scientific proof that has validity or that, you know, that we should be looking at. But thousands of years of many people using something safely is a long-term and actually far more potent experiment than, you know, 18 months of some clinical drug testing, if you really look at the weight of the evidence.
Well, that's actually absolutely correct, and it's one piece of a larger lack of respect that exists, which is we have no respect for people's own experience. One set of that is our historical experience, but another set is you have many situations in which hundreds, if not thousands, of people are using a natural approach to addressing a particular problem. It could be diabetes, it could be cancer, it could be any of the major diseases. They use a natural approach and they have very positive outcomes. And the agencies really totally denigrate that. They consider it to be anecdotal. They do not consider it to be of any significance. You're not allowed as a company to that purveys these products, to use testimonials that make statements that connect a substance to a disease, unless you've done that $100 million worth of testing. And so you have a systematic denial of not only historical experience, but actual contemporary experience. Mm-hmm. And they, for example, in hearings where a product is being attacked by the government, you are not allowed to bring people in and say, well, I use that product and it really helped me in the following ways. You're not allowed to have their doctors come in and say that. Any testimony on about an individual's experience with a product is considered to be anecdotal and inadmissible. And they feel totally, you know, these are not stupid people that are saying this, and they actually think that's an intelligent position, and they put it out, and they expect people to just to swallow it just the way they do. And it's one of the areas where there needs to be a major battle saying, look, people's experience is legitimate, and it's a legitimate source of knowledge to know how to behave moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the ways societies move forward for centuries, is learning. They learn one-on-one and pass it on to others.
Exactly.
In this society, not allowed.
That's you're absolutely right. That's the beginning of science. Something's observed. A person observes it in their own health. A practitioner observes it over and over in a clinical setting with numbers of people. That should be the beginning of inquiry, not the place where an iron door shuts down, in an exclusionary manner. Well, let's take a break now, Jim, for station identification. And listeners, please stay with us for the second half of Connect the Dots. I'm speaking with James Turner, the chairman of Citizens for Health, about a whole range of interesting, basically constructs and policies that impact our health and the way things are regulated in our society. Please stay with us. Welcome back, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and this is the second half of our show. Our theme music, which you've just heard, is really applicable for what we're talking about on today's program. It's The Garden by Bobby McFerrin. It's an interesting conversation because we've been talking and are going back to a conversation with Jim Turner, Chairman of Citizens for Health. We've been talking in the first half of the show about the thinking in regulatory policy, science, and law, and economics, about what constitutes healthy things that we should be putting in our bodies and what needs to be regulated loosely, tightly, or really barred from use, and all the different thought processes and structures and philosophy that backs that up. And behind it all, of course, is the Garden of Nature, where all our food and herbs and all of the healing things, the water and everything that really we need to sustain life, the sources of life that support the life within us, come from nature. But in our highly supposedly evolved civilization, we've kind of taken some wrong turns where we've regarded the sources of life as being somehow a threat or dangerous or unclean, and something produced in a synthesized in a lab and owned by a big company, somehow that's healthy and that's great. That's a bit of an oversimplification, but if you kind of take a big stroke look at it, in an odd way, we've gotten things really backwards. And one of the organizations that's done so much over many, many years to kind of put things back into right relationship, so that we can access the things we need for our health and know that they're healthy and that we can get them, is Jim Turner of Citizens for Health, my guest on the show today. So welcome back for the second half of the
Connect the Dots. Thanks, I'm glad to be here.
That was a really, I think this level of, I'm personally fascinated by the level of complexity. And, you know, I think it's really terrific that people, listeners, advocates, activists, people concerned about health, not only, eat healthy, do healthy things, make healthy consumer choices, but that they also protect you know, the products and make sure that our society makes better choices. And we all can do that by being activists and being part of a community of concerned citizens protecting food and health and supplement rights, as we were discussing earlier in the show. And people can do that by going to and signing up with your organization at citizens.org and get, you know, occasional emails so you can be part of the concern, the concerned voices that are protecting health and the resources of life in our society. Please, listeners, do it today. But, you know, I also feel shows like this kind of help us in really kind of looking deeper into the roots of how in our philosophy and power structure things have gone awry, so that we're not protecting health. We have a form of corporate protectionism instead. And I think it's also important to listen to conversations like the one we're having today, and also to, so that you, listener, can, you know, kind of be really deeply informed and think through these issues and be able to share it with people you know and discuss it with them. And that's the reason we do this show. So, you know, I hope if you find this helpful that you'll also pass the show link on, let others know, go to the Connect the Dots archives and listen to some of our prior programs as a way of getting the word out and about. And if you tweet or go on Facebook, please do that as well. You can also sign up on my Facebook page, Connecting the Dots for Health. And Jim, do you guys have a Facebook page?
We do. You can connect to it from our citizens.org page. And we have a Twitter page, and we have another website which we have been promoting and using for the last 8 months, mm-hmm. Which is called Food Identity Theft. Mm-hmm. And that's one that would be useful. You can go to citizens.org and then click on that, or you can just Google food identity theft. It's actually foodidentitytheft.org. Mm-hmm. But the premise of that page it goes right to the heart of what we think individuals need for their own ability to function in the kind of food supply that we have. And mm-hmm. so what we've got now is a series of about 60 articles that have been written about various ways in which the food supply tells you one thing on the front of the package, and if you're smart enough to look at the back, that is, if you've got enough information, you can see that what you're being told is just not true mm-hmm. on the front. So they'll say things like, one of the issues is high fructose corn syrup, which is a very, very serious food additive that should be avoided by everyone. Mm-hmm. And even somebody as intelligent, apparently, as Mayor Bloomberg in New York, is out running around talking about sugary soft drinks. But mm-hmm. the drinks he's talking about are high fructose corn syrup drinks, and we've got a lot of information about how that product has been completely misrepresented by the corn industry. And in particular, they petitioned the FDA to change the name of high fructose corn syrup to corn sugar. Mm-hmm. And we really protested that. We got about 10,000 comments into the FDA. And ultimately, the FDA rejected that petition. And I can tell you, I met with the president of the Corn Producers Association when they put the petition in. And I said, you know, this is just not acceptable. And we're going to make sure it doesn't happen. And they had the largest law firm in Washington, and they thought they were going to really just kind of slip this thing by. Well, we got involved, and actually, much to the surprise of many people in Washington, the thought being that they wouldn't take any action at FDA until after the election. Mm-hmm. But they did, again, about a month ago, they did reject the corn industry's effort. Unfortunately, the industry is moving forward. That is, the corn people are moving forward and continuing to say high fructose corn syrup is another kind of sugar. And mm-hmm. We're going to file some petitions and see if we can't alter that particular nature of the debate. But we also have things like, you'll see something that says blueberry muffins, and they aren't actually blueberries. They're little gelatin things colored blue. There are things that like craisins, which you have to be really careful about, because
things like what? Like
they're
what?
Called craisins, and they've created them as if they were like raisins, but made from cranberries. But they are in many instances not made from cranberries directly. They're made from the waste of creating cranberry juice. There are a whole range of things. We just did something on what the regulatory process is doing to raw almonds. Behavior, the Department of Agriculture, which has no authority over the safety of foods, has required all almonds to be treated with a chemical or to be treated with steam. But the chemical that they are offering as one of the choices is a recognized by EPA as a probable carcinogen, and they're saying this should be on all almonds. This is just bizarre. Now, this is the kind of thing we're doing on food identity theft, to have people understand what the food supply is said to be by the people who are the marketers versus what it actually is by everybody who knows it. I mean, it's not like there's a big debate about these things. You think you're getting a drink that has some kind of a natural sweetener in it, and it turns out to be it's not quite an industrial waste, but it's close to it. It's something that you really wouldn't want to eat if you knew what you were eating.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing is true, by the way, of all the artificial sweeteners. They're, every one of them is created in some kind of an industrial way, and each of them has their own set of serious side effects that harm certain people who are susceptible. Each one can be carefully drawn apart and looked at. We have petitions pending on aspartame, and we have one on Splenda at FDA, trying to clarify what the facts are there. But again, our general point is that the regulatory process that was conceived and dedicated to the notion of protecting the public has been carefully turned into a barrier that protects corporations from the public. And that is a fundamental problem across the board in the regulatory structure that we face.
That's a really, I think with the minute you speak of almonds, for example, which, I mean, I just made a raw almond smoothie this last weekend for family visiting, soaked the almonds, removed the skins, blended it up, strained it through cheesecloth because it's such a healthy, high-protein drink. And, I think of all the raw foodies I've covered and eaten raw food at various times and in various seasons. I like to eat some raw food and get all those natural enzymes. I don't subsist on it entirely in winter or anything like that. But all those bright-eyed, raw foodies out there, putting green power in their drink and living on salads and smoothies and good raw dishes, and almonds are really the substrate of that. They're the main ingredient. I'd love to see those people, with the high vibration they have, get involved.
And they have been. We mm-hmm. we actually had a very strong group of raw food advocates, and they stepped forward and are part of there's a case in court challenging what the Department of Agriculture has done, and we filed an amicus brief from citizens and a couple of other groups here in Washington. The point we want to make over and over is that there's a fundamental question about the right of an individual to have access to safe raw almonds, and that's a debate. But there's a different debate, which is that the government should not be systematically denying people of all kinds of the choices that they want to make. There needs to be a really strong reason for the government to step in, and they need to do it with a very carefully developed and applied set of rules. And this, just the raw almond case, is an example where a system that was established during the Depression to help farmers protect the prices of their products, that system was twisted into creating a safety argument from the Department of Agriculture through basically a group of people who have no scientific competence, and they validated an action by a board that grows almonds. The result of all of this, by the way, there's an almond agriculture board. The result of all of this is that the raw almond market in the U.S. has essentially been destroyed as far as raw almond producers are concerned. because the major almond-producing area is the Central Valley of California, which is covered by this rule. But if you grow almonds in another part of the country, you're perfectly free to not use this stuff. 80% of the almonds come from California. So what happens now? Also, you can grow the almonds without being treated the way I've described with the probable carcinogen and ship them overseas. That's perfectly legal. And you are also able to grow them without the chemical that I'm talking about and sell them in bags of 100 pounds or less at a roadside stand at your farm. And so now a little black market, or sort of gray market, I guess, because people are going and driving their cars out to the farms and buying them up and taking them home. It's hard to get them over to Vermont that way, but you can certainly do it around California. And all of this is being done in the name of really foolish, nonsensical scientific arguments that don't make any sense at all. As I say, we're challenging that. But it's an
example. One thing that I wonder about all of this, Jim, that I think creates tremendous confusion on a political level, and, we only have 12 more minutes, so we're not going to be able to cover this in depth. But, one of the things that I think is tremendously confusing to people, just overall, and something that I think causes many people to just throw their hands up in the air and say, I give up, or I don't know how to handle this, and it also polarizes people, is there are some people who are, on the one hand, they're going, the government is bad. Let them get out of everything. The less they have to say or rule over anything concerning me, the better off I am. So that's like one school of thought. And, of course, when it comes to doing, kind of asinine things like what you're describing with the almonds, that makes sense. But then the other end of the day, you're going also, as we've seen in the fracking community, where they lifted their hands and decided, Dick Cheney put through a portion of the 2005 energy bill basically dysregulating all the hazardous industrial chemicals used in fracking. That's a place where you would want them to come in, and individuals can't. So on the one hand, you want them to step out of blocking the way from farmer to people that want the healthy almonds, but in the other place, you need them to step in and interpose, because people can't protect themselves house by house and community by community from a mass industrial product, with heavy aftermath that there's been a huge investment in.
Well, there's a big debate. There's a big debate about big government versus small government. Mm-hmm. And my answer has always been, the argument is, should government do more or less? Mm-hmm. And my argument is very simple. It should do more of what it does well and less of what it does badly.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, we're doing the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
What you have, first of all, we need to be very, very clear that major corporations are essentially de facto governments.
Mm-hmm.
You have major corporations in the Fortune 500 that are larger than most states.
Mm-hmm.
And they have their own security forces, they have their own foreign policy, they have their own system of discipline, and they are in control of a piece of the country, whether it's, raising and selling corn, or whether it's running railroads. They have a major piece of the country, and they are large entities. And the debate often says, well, let the businesses do what they want, get government out of their way. Now, when people make that argument, if you listen carefully, they're almost always talking about small business, not big business.
Mm-hmm.
Big businesses are essentially de facto governments.
Mm-hmm.
As an individual at the bottom of the heap, whether you're screwed by government or screwed by a big corporation, you're screwed nonetheless.
Mm-hmm.
And then the government and the big corporations make alliances. And that's one of the things that we need to really look at very, very, very carefully in the whole political process.
Mm-hmm.
On the food side, one of the things that's true about politics is that the currency of politics is either people or money. If you don't have people, you have to have money. So if you see somebody spending $60 million, as they are doing in California, to defeat the idea of labeling genetically modified foods, $60 million to defeat that. 80% of the public wants that to be passed. $60 million is going into the till to stop it. That is a case in which the people have the opportunity to overturn the corporate government complex that wants to actually keep away from you information that's valuable for your health and well-being. Now, if we can engage in these battles effectively, and we've done it quite well over the last, I actually started on the food stuff working with Ralph Nader in 1968. I wrote a book called The Chemical Feast in 1970, and everything we've been doing since then, myself and our firm and our team here, has been really started by that book. We've gone, you know, helped dietary supplements. We lobbied heavily for the Organic Food Production Act. We lobbied very strongly for the Nutrition Labeling Act. Making nutritional claims on food was illegal until 1990. We also campaigned effectively, and I was the lawyer that helped get acupuncture needles approved by the FDA. 25 years, FDA had acupuncture needles as illegal in this country. 1996 is when they became legal. Now, my point is that you can win these battles if you work systematically. And the point I'm getting at with all of the different things I just named as battles and many others is that there's a natural alternative to every one of the neo-technical alternatives that are being put out in front of us. Monsanto says that the food, there's not going to be enough food in the world, so we have to have genetically modified organisms put into food so we have enough food. Well, both of those arguments are wrong. There is enough food, and there are many natural ways of producing food that we can use to produce even more food than we have. It's the politics that keeps the food from getting to the people that need it. And then GMOs actually are cutting into the ability of food to be produced. Many yields are down using GMOs. These are debates that we need to have as generic debates. It's the notion of the culture that we live in is that every problem can be solved by some kind of technical intervention by big-time scientists. Not true. In fact, they've created as many problems as they solved.
Yeah, I think that is the bottom line. And you know, for many years people were I think historically, for you know, in the first wave, people were programmed. If it came out of a can and it's got a bunch of synthetic ingredients, it's somehow better. Then there was a reaction, and people were like, "Well, no, I don't really, you know, maybe I want to read a label. I want to reconsider. I don't want to be eating that." But then the thought was, "Well, I'll just creep around the edges of what's going on in our society, and I'll just try to find the alternative solution for myself and my family." And we had a whole generation that, you know, you were part of, I've been part of, promoting making those healthy choices. And I think the next wave is turning back to these systems and pushing back and saying no, because we won't have the rights to make those individual choices if we keep allowing, you know, this march to go forward and these values that are anti-human, anti-life, anti-people to dominate.
Well, as the generations began saying, well, let's look at the food, let's read the labels, let's understand what's going on, the corporate government sector got together and tried to pull away that kind of information. There was a time in which if you said my milk is not made with bovine growth hormone, they would take you to court and stop you from saying that. That was about a 5-year fight to get that reversed. Just systematically, the corporate sector, in almost all instances supported by government, has gone after the right and the ability of the individual consumer to make meaningful choices. They mess with the labeling. They manipulate it. They try to make it look like it's one thing when it's actually something else. And we need to do two things need to keep going. One is people need to continue that struggle to make the individual choices. And now that we're finding out what lengths they'll go to mislead the public, we need to do the policy work that changes that particular focus of things. And if we can do both of those, we will, in fact, in the long run, I think the people will beat the money on that kind of an issue.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a brilliant analysis. The people versus the money. So, you know, even it's interesting where, for example, I mean, I think that's a really simple but true analysis. For example, in fracking communities, you know, you see in these small towns where they rural regions where they start to frack, and now they're doing it nearer and nearer and nearer to suburban and urban environments. You know, you see people selling out their actual neighbors, their family members. They're basically saying, I have a right to do with my land as I wish, and, you know, what happens to you is not my concern. So, you know, when you see the larger things in a society where we go, we're not going to take care of people who are having an economic problem. We're not going to take care of people who are having a health problem. You know, these are all kind of anonymous others that we're not taking care of. But it even gets right down to, you know, not taking care of your neighbor, your cousin, your community, where you are, thinking, you know, you'll go take your big bucks that you fantasize you'll get and you'll go off somewhere else. And we see this going on in the fracking community. So really, what you're describing, Jim, the kind of advocacy that's called for across the board is an advocacy for people.
Rights. When I started out, when I talked to Ralph originally, Ralph Nader originally, my point was that all the areas that we have as markets were as bad as the car market. Mm-hmm. And that we could look at each one of them and find the same kind of problems that he was identifying in cars. This isn't an argument we shouldn't have cars or we shouldn't have food. The argument is we should have better cars and better food. I mean, that was the argument we were making. But I picked food because 100% of the people consume food. And it's really fascinating to watch people when they're dealing with food and health and the interactions, how energized people get when it has to do with protecting their own health, their own well-being, their own children's ability to have good food. They get very, very involved. And we have, a very large group of people who are able to bring to bear this is at Citizens for Health, a good deal of pressure on public policy that affects food. And we're expanding that out now to deal with, you know, dietary supplements are a part of that. And we're expanding that out now to deal things like alternative medicine, complementary alternative integrative medicine.
And so we're coming near the end of our show here and, you know, kind of getting down to the wire. So I just want to give one more plug to listeners. Sign on at citizens.org, be part of that active concern group. I want to thank you, Jim, so much for being with me today.
Thank you.
Connect the Dots. I'm so with you on everything you're doing and grateful for the work you're doing, and we all should feel that way. And I want to thank you, listeners, for being with us and joining in, being part of the conversation here. Please send me your feedback. You can Facebook friend me. I'd love to know how you're enjoying the show. Check in at my website, healthjournalistblog.com, and be with us again next week for another edition of Connect the Dots at 10 a.m. Eastern on Progressive Radio Network. Thank you so much. Look forward to talking with you next week. Bye.
Now I live.